And now for reading and writing and radio.
It was Monday. It snowed and we didn't go to school. Time was going by slow. First I got up. Me and my mom talked. Then Mom fixed a special breakfast. It was delicious. We watched TV while Mom shoveled sidewalks. Then at 9 o'clock, me, Mom, and David, my brother, went outside. Mom helped us build a snowman. When we went inside, she made cocoa and tea, and after a while she played a game with us, and she let us help make cookies. Then at supper, she made snow ice cream for dessert. And at bedtime, she said, "Mom and Dad love you."
That was written by fourth grader Bob Singleton from Clark Brown Elementary, Troy, Missouri. But it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
We have a special program tonight, and I'm saying tonight because we're recording it at night at my house, which is also our classroom for the reading and writing and radio class for teachers. Our topic tonight is, how do you know they care? I'm going to read first, though, some things from Mr. Girardi's class at Madison Park Litchfield, the fifth grade, because I wrote to them special and said, would you send in some things on this topic so we'd have something to read from kids. We got in quite a few stories on punishments, that kids know their parents care about them because they punish them. And one of these was from Dennis Reisinger. He says, "When I was 4 years old, I got into a bottle of pills. Just as I was going to eat the pill, my mom caught me. She took the pills away and slapped my hand and mouth. Then she said, 'I don't want to see you do that again. Now hear me.' From then on, I stayed out of the medicine. My mother also put all the medicine up. Today I understand why she slapped me. She slapped me because I could have gotten very sick or even died." And other kids that wrote on punishments were Jamie Laird and Sarah Babington, and John B. said a cuss word and had his mouth washed out. Mike Wilcox played with matches. Lori Neiman. Connie Bassel, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, her hand got burnt, and her friend Paul cared enough to call her up and see how she was coming along. She wrote about that. We had several papers on how your animals know that you care for them and how you know that your animals care for you. We had two on how Mr. Girardi cared for his class. Here is Kay Beck. "Mr. Girardi cares a lot about us because he teaches us. He does yell at us because he wants us to learn. He wants us to learn so that when we are grown up, we can get a job. Sometimes he gets very mad, and then after a while, he is not mad." Deborah C. doesn't mention that you're ever mad, Mr. Girardi. She says, "I enjoy being in Mr. Girardi's class because if you need help, he will help you. He cares about us, and if we have a problem, and we will tell him about it. He tries to help us solve it. He is really a kind and considerate teacher. He has a lot of patience with the class. If the class are sick or hurt, Mr. Girardi worries about them and checks every little bit to see if they are okay." The story goes on quite a bit more about what it's like to be in Mr. Girardi's class. And then two came in about the program. Here's Eric Chumley. He says, "Well, I know you," meaning me, Jackie Jackson, "really care because you're sponsoring this program for us and reading all the writing that we've sent in. You've dedicated this program to us. So, okay, Madison Park, we've dedicated this program to you. That really shows you care. I think you really do care about all the kids who listen to your program." your wonderful program. We'll get in that good word from Eric Chumley. And then Chris Morgan says, how does Mrs. Jackson care? She cares about us because she could have picked 50 other schools, but she cared so much she picked us. I like Mrs. Jackson, especially when she brings her friends to help her read the papers we send in to her. So tonight we've got lots of friends here that are going to read the and talk with us. Let's see, were there... here was an animal one I wanted to read by Thad Leach, I think his name is. My animals show they love me by not hiding and by barking when they see me. My mice always come out of their hiding place to see me. I pick them up out of their aquarium and they don't jump or run. My dogs never bark at me unless they're hungry or if we're playing or something is wrong. They always wag their tails. And here's one who knows how her grandma cares. This is Rhonda, B-U-N-Z maybe, or B-U-N-G-E. It's sort of runs off the page. 1 week last summer, my mom got sick, so everyone packed some clothes and went to my grandma's house. Angela, my sister, and I stayed there. We had a good time. We watched trains and went to the carnival. We stayed all night with my grandma and grandpa. I know they care. And then there was one more that I couldn't quite classify, which was by Chris Hansley, and she jumped out and scared her mother. And her mother slapped her, she was so scared. I know how that feels. But then afterwards, Chris said, I would never do it again, and that I was sorry, and my mom said, that's okay, let's go eat. And after that, we never thought about it again. So thanks, Madison Park, for sending us in those papers. Well, Els, would you read this passage out of a book called When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit by Judith Kerr? And this is a story of a refugee Jewish girl from Hitler's Germany, and she is in Switzerland with her family, and she's new to Switzerland, and she is walking home from school, and the boys are following her, and she is getting more and more worried about it. So start in right there, Elspeth.
She walked more quickly, and the steps behind her quickened also. Then a little stone bounced off the gravel to one side of her. While she was still wondering where it had come from, another little stone hit her leg. She turned round sharply and was just in time to see the red-haired boy pick up a bit of gravel and throw it at her. "What are you doing?" she shouted. "Stop it!" But he just grinned and threw another bit. Then his friends began to throw some, too. Most of it missed her, and any stones that did hit her were too small to hurt, but it was horrid just the same. Then she saw a small, bandy-legged boy, hardly bigger than herself, pick up a whole great handful of gravel. "Don't you dare throw that at me!" she shouted so fiercely that the bandy-legged boy automatically took a step backwards. He threw the gravel in her direction, but deliberately aimed short. Anna glared at him. The boy stood staring back at her. Suddenly the red-haired boy took a step forward and shouted something. The others took it up in a sort of chant. "Anna, Anna," they chanted. Then the red-haired boy threw another bit of gravel and hit her squarely on the shoulder. It was too much. She turned and fled. Down the path, bits of gravel bouncing all round her, peppering her back, her legs. "Anna, Anna," they were coming after her. Her feet slipped and slithered on the stones. If only she could get to the road, at least they wouldn't be able to throw gravel at her. And there it was, lovely, smooth, hard asphalt under her feet. "Anna, Anna," they were gaining ground. Now they were no longer stopping to pick up gravel. They were coming on faster. Suddenly a large object hurled past her. A shoe. They were throwing their shoes at her. At least they'd have to stop to pick them up. She rounded a bend and could see the Gasthof's Wurm at the end of the road. The last bit was downhill, and she almost threw herself down the slope as with one final effort she reached the courtyard of the inn. "Anna, Anna," boys right behind her, shoes raining all round. And there, like a miracle, like an avenging angel, was Mama. She shot out of the inn like a torpedo. She grabbed the red-haired boy and slapped him. She hit another one with his own shoe. She flung herself into the group and scattered them. All the time she was shouting, "Why are you doing this? What's the matter with you?" That was what Anna wanted to know, too. Then she saw that Mama had got hold of the bandy-legged boy and was shaking him. All the rest had fled. "Why did you chase her?" Mama was asking. Why did you all throw things at her? What had she done?" The bandy-legged boy scowled and wouldn't say. "I won't let you go," said Mama. "I won't let you go until you tell me why you did it." The bandy-legged boy looked hopelessly at Mama. Then he blushed and mumbled something. "What?" said Mama. Suddenly the bandy-legged boy grew desperate. "Because we love her," he shouted at the top of his voice. "We did it because we love her." Mama was so surprised that she let go of him, and he shot away from her across the courtyard and away down the road. "Because they loved you?" said Mama to Anna. Neither of them could understand it. But when, later, they consulted Max, he did not seem very surprised. "It's what they do here," he said. "When they're in love with anyone, they throw things at them." "But good heavens, there were six of them," said Mama. "Surely there must be other ways for them to express their love." Max shrugged. "It's what they do," he said, and added, "Really, Anna should feel honored." A few days later, Anna saw him in the village, throwing unripe apples at Rosalie. Max was very adaptable.
Thanks, Elspeth. Max, as you gathered, was the brother, and he caught on fast to throw things at his girlfriend. Well, that ought to start us off. Do any of you in the group want to start by telling us how you know they care?
I was reminded tonight, Jackie, of a poem that was written by my son when he was in high school about how he felt when his father quit hugging and kissing him. And it really bothered him, and he couldn't understand why all of a sudden they had to shake hands instead of hugging and kissing. And so, it was several years after he wrote the poem that I showed it to my husband. And it was very touching for him. And since that time, when they've been apart for a long time and they meet, then they will embrace, just as they did when Kurt was a small boy.
I think that's neat. And I'm glad that he brought it up, too. I have in my notes, and I don't know who wrote this. It was a teacher another year. She said, "My children have trophies and loving cups from various activities, and my husband has golf trophies. Me, nothing. One day I said, 'You win 'em, I dust 'em.' The next Mother's Day, my middle daughter handed me a very small loving cup with a stuck-on insignia, 'World's Best Mother.' She smiled as she handed it to me and said, 'Here, Mom, this is yours until further notice.'" So, if the mom continues to measure up.
I think we all like to be appreciated. Us as teachers probably have notes or things that we've saved over the years of someone who especially liked what we did or appreciated us in some way. The really nicest compliment I think I ever got was a mother of someone who I had taught at least 4 years ago had said, "You know, when this particular person is in the car or with his friends, I overhear him say, 'You know, Mrs. Ford used to say this,' or 'Mrs. Ford used to say that,' and I think they remember." And it's such a compliment, I think, that a child would remember what you said enough that and feel it worthwhile to keep. That really made me feel good.
So you know that the kid listened to you
and appreciated you
and really cared.
And it's still 4 years later, he still does, so it makes it nice.
I think we can talk from the other direction from what some of these Litchfield kids wrote about when they were talked about being punished. Mm-hmm. Because I think I take other people's traumas fairly well. I behave well in a traumatic situation until it's my own kids. And when it's my own kids, then I really push the panic button and get very, you know, excited and upset and so forth. Any of the rest of you ever push the panic button with your kids? Remember any stories? I have one here that Teresa Beach wrote when she was in Mrs. Lowe's class last year, the year before, where she was in a trunk. She was playing hide and seek and she got in a trunk. And they didn't find her for a while. And finally her father found her and he was so upset when he got her out that he slapped her. And she said that she was upset and stunned at being slapped, but she realized that he was so upset himself that she could have died. Suffocated there in the trunk, that was why he slapped her.
My father had slapped my older sister at one time. I don't even remember anymore what the occasion was, but he had hurt her, and when he immediately sensed that he had done that, he sat right down with all of us and said, "I vow right now I will never hit any of you again." And he never did, and I think partly it was because His own father used to hit him hard enough to throw him across the room, and he had lost hearing because of it. That when he had, whatever made him mad enough to slap her, that he had said from then on, that he never did touch us again. He had other ways of getting back or punishing us. He didn't have to touch us.
And but he cared enough that he didn't want to mm-hmm. hurt you, as he had been hurt.
One thing we had in the family that I grew up in was a structure that kind of kept us from getting into too much trouble and was a way of not having to punish too much, and that was family meetings that we had. And it mostly happened because my parents had 4 children in 5 years, and only one of them was a boy, and he just felt a little picked on, I guess, or that nothing was set up for him, and he didn't speak up a lot, and so my parents set up a meeting and encouraged people to talk and make rules and plans. And we had discussion periods, and we made complaints against each other. And anything that came up during the week when we used to fight, we would just say, bring it up at meeting, bring it up at meeting. And then we'd have a little case prepared. But usually not too many things came up because we'd bargain back and forth. Well, I won't tell this at Sunday meeting if you don't tell that. And and there was also...
So that shows how your sisters and your brother cared for you and didn't tell on you.
And the older two kind of ganged up, and then the younger two did. And we'd make our own rules, what time bedtime was and how many people we could have in the clubhouse and things like that. And it was always the two older didn't want us to set bedtimes that gave us an advantage they didn't have at our age. And we didn't want the older ones to get away with things that we couldn't get away with because we were too little. And except for rules like you couldn't follow 10 feet behind an older kid, other than things like that, we really didn't get hurt too much by it. And we made some silly rules. I was the youngest at the time, and I made a rule like it can't snow on Sunday, and just something so I could talk. But mostly it just kept big problems from coming up, and it kept us bartering back and forth rather than bickering.
Well, Therese, you've written about how your family had a round table. And was this the same sort of thing where the kids would have a say and
whenever there was anything important, like we were going to decide where we were going to go on a vacation, or if we were going to do something to the house, or how they thought they should be punished for something they knew they did, we would meet at the kitchen table and everybody discuss it. So it was the same sort of thing.
Well, it shows that you cared enough about your kids that you let them have a voice in
right.
family affairs and just didn't dictate to them. And the kids would recognize this too and participate themselves, wouldn't they?
Right.
Yeah. I know one way that I knew that my folks cared for me is that they had loving nicknames. I don't know why. Well, my mother called me Pink Heels. She didn't call me that very often, and I guess it was because my heels were pinker than the other kids in the family. But once in a while, when she would say that, why, it made me feel good inside, because I knew that my mother was feeling particularly loving toward me. I wrote my nephew. He had sent my grandma, not my grandma, he had sent his grandma, who's my mother, a letter. And he had included in it something that his mother had done, and then they lost the letter, so I'll have to tell you what it was, because Ron didn't write it back to me. But he said, one nice thing about my mother is that whenever she has to correct me on something, or I'm being noisy or saying things out in company that I shouldn't, that instead of saying it right in front of everybody, she takes me off somewhere and tells me, or waits until after we're home. She doesn't embarrass me in front of other people. And when my mother told me about that, and I said, hey, that's the sort of story that I'd like for our program, How Do You Know They Care? Because his mother cares enough not to embarrass him. I know that I'm sort of glad my kids left the room, because I embarrass them all the time, so they tell me. I guess most of us parents do, don't we?
Well, I think my mom had a way of... without really embarrassing, but she had her own signal. Whenever she was angry with you, she used your middle name. So it would be Jane Ellen. And then I would know, well, okay, I better come right away, or I've done something, or don't do what you're doing and we'll discuss it later, kind of thing. She had her own signal. She used your middle name. It meant, watch out.
But that wasn't embarrassing you then in front of
Not
others.
Not really.
It gave
no,
you the
but
clue.
You knew. You knew.
Yeah.
We had one thing in our family where kids were always berated because they were always interrupting. The parents would have these long conversations, and the child would say, but, shh, shh. So they finally set up a thing where you could hold your hand up flat in the air. And it was a way without stopping the conversation of saying, I want to talk. And pretty soon the parents or whoever would wind up the conversation and then give the child a chance to politely put in his 2 cents.
You know, kids get shut out of conversations, don't they, if there isn't some way to let them in.
I have a little story I want to tell with my voice of my cold. We were coming back from vacation, and it was on my birthday, and I thought everybody had forgotten my birthday. And we landed in St. Louis, and as we were trying to get the bags all together, I was looking around for all my kids to see that they will help in bringing the bags in. And one boy, my son, was not there, and I was really getting very upset with him because he wasn't there to help his brother and father and sister to pick up the bags. And pretty soon, I feel a tap on my shoulder. I turned around, and my son was there with 2 roses in his hand. He had gone all over the floors to find a florist, and he got me 2 roses and said, Happy birthday, Mother. And that meant so much to me that day. He really cared. And I was rather upset with myself because I was expecting him to be there helping with the bags.
And we're feeling angry at
him. Yes.
Yeah, how many times has that happened? Somebody is doing something really nice for you and you're feeling, you're not realizing it.
A few summers ago when I was visiting with my family, just on the spur of the moment, I thanked my mother for such a happy childhood. And she was so pleased I couldn't have given her anything nicer. She said, well, I tried, but she said, I never did know how you really felt about it. And so sometimes I might take that as a thought, you know, tell them thank you, because I did. I had a fantastic childhood, and I know it's because my parents cared.
Well, those of you that are listening, write in on how you know that they care, and also write in to us on how they know that you care, and then we'll play your stories on the next Reading and Writing and Radio. And thanks, everybody here.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.